Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. And don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. And don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. It's every other Sunday again. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, and as always, there are some technical bugs I'm still working out. You're listening to Sustainability Now, a biweekly K-Squid radio show focused on environment, sustainability, and social justice in the Monterey Bay region, California, and the world. So even though California is the most populous state in the nation, a lot of it is open and empty. Even near big cities, you can see this when you fly over the state. But the millions living in cities want access to those lands, and they also provide critically important ecosystem functions. Today, we're going to talk about open spaces. My guest is Andrea McKenzie, General Manager of the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority. For more than 25 years, Ms. McKenzie has worked in the fields of land use planning, conservation planning, public policy, and finance for open space and agricultural land preservation agencies at county, regional, state, and national levels. The Open Space Authority works to protect and steward the region's natural capital, open spaces, water resources, natural areas, and working lands to support healthy lands, resilient communities, and strong economies. It also provides a variety of activities that are free to the public, such as guided nature walks, bike and equestrian rides, photography walks, educational programs for children, and stargazing sessions. So, Andrea McKenzie, welcome to Sustainability Now.
Thank you, Ronnie. It's great to be with you.
Why don't we start by you telling us what the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority is and what its history is and what kind of entity it is.
Sure, be glad to. Well, you did a great introduction just a second ago. But the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority is a public land conservation agency and special district that was created by the legislature in 1993. We're a special kind of public agency. We're independent of any county or city, and we're established for a specific purpose. And in our case, it's to protect open space, natural and agricultural lands, and connect people to nature. And I like to say that we're a small agency with a big mission and a big territory. We cover over 1,000 square miles of Santa Clara County, and we include 5 cities in the unincorporated area of Santa Clara County.
The boundaries are the county boundaries, right?
Actually, we're not a full county public land conservation agency. We're about 3/4 of the county, and our boundary is coterminous or abuts the Mid Peninsula Regional Open Space District.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Across the San Francisco Bay region, there are open space agencies in just about every county. Special districts with a special focus on open space preservation for the benefit of the public. So I'm really excited to be working with the Open Space Authority and doing this important work.
So these things have to be authorized by the legislature, huh? Is there a history to this whole movement or process?
You know, in the San Francisco Bay region, as I mentioned, just about every county has an open space district, and there's different ways that you can form them. We were formed through the California legislature, but obviously you don't form open space districts without the support, the hard work and support of local decision makers and the general public at large. But once we're formed, we do really, really important work to protect natural lands and open space areas, wildlife habitat, water resources, and agricultural land. And we're funded in different ways, and I can go into that more if you'd like.
Yeah, why don't you tell us? Because that's always the reason I ask all of this is that I haven't been able to find such an authority in Santa Cruz County. I think most of those functions are taken up by the county land trust. So I am curious about, you know, formation and funding and the like.
Yeah. Well, each open space district in the Bay region has different funding. Some are funded by property tax, some by sales tax. In the case of the Open Space Authority, we have two sources of funding. One is a parcel tax, so $24 per parcel per year. And then we also have a $12 per parcel assessment. So that brings in about $12 million a year annually to implement our conservation mission and ensure the benefits in nature are available to all of our constituents.
And then, so the funding then comes through the jurisdictions or through the county? I mean, you said there's property tax, for example. Does it then get redistributed by the county to you? Is that how it works?
Yeah, counties play the role of collecting the funds, and then they distribute it to the special districts. So we are an independent government agency with our own elected board of directors, our own districts that are formed based on the census. And we work closely with the county and the cities, but we are an independent government agency.
And so how many districts then? I'm just asking about the minutia because I'm interested in better understanding. How many districts does the authority include?
Well, we have seven board districts, just like water districts.
I see.
Or county supervisorial districts, we include the cities of Campbell, Milpitas, Santa Clara, San Jose, and Morgan Hill. So the boundaries of those districts overlap the different cities and the unincorporated areas. And in fact, like many government agencies, we're about to undertake a redistricting process based on the last census, and that's coming up.
Oh, that's interesting. And who decides on that? Do you have some kind of system for doing the redistricting?
Yeah. I mean, it's prescribed in many ways by law, but our elected board of directors will oversee any changes to their districts to make sure they're representative of population and they're balanced in other ways.
So that's
an important job.
So, yeah, interesting. Well, how did you get into this business?
That's a really good question. Well, I've really had a lifelong love affair with nature and wild places, which began as a child. I don't know if you were around, Ronnie, when Wild Kingdom was on the Disney Channel, but I used to love to watch that and grew up visiting national parks and camping and backpacking. But it, you know, funny enough, it wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles I really began spending a lot of time exploring the outdoors in the Santa Monica Mountains, which is really LA's wilderness. And from there, I went on to college at UC Santa Barbara. I studied environmental studies, which prepared me for a series of nature and park-focused jobs. And when I came to the Bay Area in my mid-20s, I came to be a national park ranger on Alcatraz Island in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. But, you know, interestingly enough, growing up in L.A. and working in one of the nation's most visited urban national parks really opened my eyes to the importance of nature in urban areas. And so I've worked around the Bay Area for different open space, agricultural and park agencies and land trusts, including in Santa Cruz. And that journey led me to the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority, where I've been the general manager for the past decade.
I have to say something about your Wild Kingdom comment. That, you know, I can't remember exactly when it was on, but I do remember never watching it because I just didn't like that kind of stuff. So I think I probably predate you, but we don't have to get into those kinds of questions. So what does a general manager do?
Well, the buck stops with the general manager. So I'm responsible for implementing the Open Space Authority's mission, which you did a good job of describing. But what we aim to do is to balance growth in the Silicon Valley by protecting, managing, and restoring open space and connecting people to it. And so I oversee the operation and management of our system of open space preserves. Mm-hmm. And I focus on the operational and financial sustainability of our agency. So I direct a staff of about 50 conservation professionals mm-hmm. And an annual budget of about $25 million. Increasingly, though, I'm focused on the challenges brought by climate change and making sure that our open spaces are equitable and accessible to everyone.
Okay. I had one other question. One of the things that you know is a little unclear to me, and I don't know if how much light you can shed on it, but you know this whole idea of open spaces, even in California, it seems to me is one that is not much more than a half a century old. And you know what do you think motivated the sort of the movement to create and protect open spaces? Have you ever looked into that?
Yeah, well, I mean, my education, you know, my formative years were in the 70s, and I think you probably are aware that so much was going on environmentally in the United States during the 70s. Many of our major pieces of environmental legislation were passed in the 70s. We had Earth Day, and the California legislature in the late 60s and into the 70s started sounding the alarm that we were losing open space rapidly to urban sprawl. And our coastline, we didn't have access to our coastline.
Right,
that was being
right.
shut off by development. Right. And
yeah.
so a lot of that really, that energy was happening in the 70s and 80s. And that's in 1972, you saw the formation of our sister agency, Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a big time for open space, and I think the San Francisco Bay Area is a really standout community and region in the country, because this notion of most of the counties having dedicated land conservation agencies and the public supporting through taxes, protecting open space is really unique to the San Francisco Bay Area. So we have... You know, over 1.4 million acres protected across the Bay region
wow.
because of those efforts.
So was the land that is now part of these open space authorities is being protected, was this land private land previously?
Yeah, so we're in the business of protecting natural lands,
right.
and they start as private lands for the most part, unless something is being transferred to us. So as we are in the business of protecting land from development, we work with willing sellers, and we prioritize lands that have multiple conservation benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And we use mm-hmm. kind of science-based computer mapping to help us derive where we're going to work. And then we approach private landowners about their willingness to sell. Sometimes landowners approach us about selling, but
yeah.
for the most part, we're trying to work cooperatively with local government and their policies to drive growth into cities where development has already happened, and to protect the green fields outside of cities for habitat, water resources, floodplains, productive agriculture, etc. So that's basically how we work.
Yeah, I'd like to come back to that. We need to take a short break, okay? You're
sure.
listening to KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org, streaming on the internet. You're listening to Sustainability Now on K-Squid. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today is Andrea McKenzie, who is the general manager of the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority. It's an authority that works to protect and steward the region's natural capital and manages a range of open spaces across Santa Clara County. So, Andrea, to get back to the topic we were just addressing, which has to do with private ownership of lands, you sometimes identify spaces and approach landowners. Are you coming under pressure from housing advocates? Because after all, a lot of these lands could have been devoted to development and housing. And I was wondering whether you find yourself in any kind of political tight spots right now.
Well, you can't talk about preserving open space and conservation and not talk about politics.
Right, sure.
Clearly. And, you know, one of the questions we often hear is, what are the trade-offs of preserving open space versus developing them for other societal needs like housing? And I think it's really important for the listeners to understand just how important open space and nature is to protect that for the benefit of people and the planet. It's more than a nice to have. We talk about nature as being infrastructure, essential infrastructure for functioning ecosystems, economies, and communities. And so nature around our cities gives us wetlands and streams for filtering our water, floodplains for absorbing storm water, and forests for purifying our air. So that infrastructure surrounds our cities. When growth moves out into these green fields, there are a lot of negative impacts and a lot of costs to government and the taxpayers for supporting that kind of sprawl development. So we work actually very closely with local government planning agencies and housing organizations on making sure we're going to provide enough housing, especially for our unhoused population, but also making sure that we're providing access to nature for people, for health, for climate resilience, and to make sure that we have both. We need both and need to focus on that both in our priorities and our funding for local government.
When you're trying to, you know, and you're looking at new open spaces that you might, that are privately owned, that you might approach the landowner to buy, do you look at spaces that are subject or might risk being developed too? That's part of the strategy. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, our mission is to balance growth with land conservation and open space protection. So
yeah.
There are many instances where land is proposed for development. It needs special consideration by a city. It needs a special permit. And we'll talk to the local government about that, and we'll talk to the landowner as well. So there is, as the amount of land in California available for these different needs shrinks, there's higher competition for that land. But I think the big factor here, Ronnie, is climate change.
Sure, yeah.
So it no longer makes sense, if it ever did, to sprawl out onto our green fields, our wetlands, floodplains, forests, woodlands. Those are areas that we need for our life support systems. So we work really closely with local planners to be as supportive as we can on places that make sense to build close to transit, close to other development, rather than sprawling out into the rural areas that are productive agricultural lands or really productive for wildlife habitat.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make an argument against that. I'm just, you know, given the uproar across California about housing and affordable housing, and there seems to be, I don't know if there's a move in California to the suburbs, but I know in some parts of the country, people are now again moving out of cities into suburbs. I mean, for whatever reason, and so that's really why I'm asking. And of course, land that could be developed has a much higher value than land that is set aside for protection. So I'm also assuming you don't pay market rate for lands that you buy to incorporate in the open space authority. Is that correct?
Actually, that's not correct.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know that.
When we value and appraise land for purchase as open space and conservation lands, we hire an appraiser. Mm-hmm. We do an appraised value, and usually what they call the highest and best use or the highest value of that land is going to be what the local city or the county shows it to be in the general plan.
I see. Okay.
So we are typically paying development values to conserve land. And we have to do that in order to work with willing sellers and to compete with what otherwise that those lands would be used for.
So where do you get the funds to pay for to do that? That's clearly not coming out of your budget, right? Or is it coming out of your budget?
That's a great question. Well, some of it is coming out of our budget. So, as I mentioned, we are a smaller government agency.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We have about $12 million a year to spend on conservation. And obviously, in the Silicon Valley, $12 million a year doesn't go very far.
No.
So we've gotten really good at leveraging those funds by working with other government funding, land trusts, philanthropic foundations, and I would say for every dollar we spend on land, we find another $3 from other sources to be able to pay the kinds of prices that these lands are worth.
Mm-hmm. Do you get any support from the big tech companies in Silicon Valley?
We have not gotten much support from tech companies. I think that's a bit of a misnomer that in the wealthy Silicon Valley, you must get a lot of support from the private sector.
I was asking. I wasn't assuming. I was just wondering about that. So,
yeah.
You know.
Although I will say that, especially with the climate crisis upon us, we're starting to see more interest by kind of innovative technology companies and the private sector who want to restore land for habitat or natural resources and who have been approaching us. But hopefully in the future there will be more private support for land conservation, which benefits those companies, especially in the Silicon Valley, attracting and retaining qualified people, providing the natural resources those companies need to be economically viable is really, really important to point out to them when we do have conversations.
Yeah. So I was looking at a map of your holdings yesterday, and I was wondering what kind of properties are you managing? You know, because I think some of them were ranches, right? Some of them were probably forests. You know, what is the range of you might say, you know, the biology, how about that? The biology and ecology of the different parcels.
Yeah, the biology and ecology of Santa Clara County, and let's call it pre-development of Silicon Valley, were productive wetlands, floodplains, grasslands, tidal wetlands, oak woodlands, really, really productive, ecologically productive lands, much of which were paved over during the 70s, 80s, 90s by the advent of the Silicon Valley, which kind of supplanted the Santa Clara Valley.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a very flat valley floor, which mostly drains to the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah.
And then the southern part of Santa Clara Valley drains to the Monterey Bay through the Pajaro Basin, Pajaro River.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Santa Cruz County, we don't have a lot in the way of redwood forests. We do have some on the margins with Santa Cruz County, but mostly our forests are oak woodlands, which are some of the most productive ecosystems on the planet. So that's kind of the ecosystem we're working in, and the kinds of places that we protect and manage are water bodies, creeks, streams, ponds for amphibians. We protect a lot of wildlife movement corridors through oak woodlands. We protect working farms and ranches, that these are private agricultural lands that might be for sale, and we want to make sure that they stay in local farming.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of open spaces that we're protecting.
I see. And how does the staff go out and actually do management? I'm sort of curious. What is management, not just the sort of directions from the central office, but actually going out onto the land? What does that entail?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I wanted to say about land management and land stewardship, there's a quote that I like to say from our former Secretary of the Interior, Sally Jewell, and she said, "We're in the business of forever." Mm-hmm. So we are the stewards of public lands in perpetuity. So our staff goes out and they are managing habitat for important species. They're ensuring that wildlife has room to roam and to adapt to climate change. They're managing the vegetation on our lands to address catastrophic wildfire, wildfires, droughts, and floods. Mm-hmm. And they are building and maintaining a system of trails for public access that ties in with a whole regional system of trails with the surrounding counties and the Bay Area Ridge Trail. So they are working with people, the public. They are working with managing the natural resources. And they are out there working with other agencies when we have wildfires like we did and are having in this climate crisis.
Yeah,
and I would say also... Oh,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say also, land stewardship and land management is not a static approach. Uh-huh. It's evolving all the time, and it has to address the changing environmental conditions that we're in. So obviously we're looking at another serious drought. We're looking at wildfires and a lot of other impacts from climate change. And so increasingly we're looking for new ways to steward and manage land. And that is bringing us into conversations with tribal communities to look at indigenous stewardship practices, especially as they relate to fire.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading on the on a website, on the LAFCO website, that some of your properties are closed to the public, and I was wondering, you know, what determines whether something is open or closed?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So, when we buy property, many of the areas we protect have environmentally sensitive habitats and natural resources, which is, of course, why we protected them in the first place. So post-acquisition, we begin biological studies and planning to identify what the most sensitive areas are. And those may end up being off-limits to the public, or they may be buffered from public access because of that. We're looking at important wildlife movement corridors using wildlife cameras. And also, many of the lands that we're acquiring are not in pristine condition. They're not wilderness as we think of it, but that's because they've previously been used for other purposes. So our staff, working with other partners, is out there restoring the wildlife habitat, improving wildlife areas by removing fencing, and addressing road conflicts that are contributing to a decline in wildlife. Also, there may be slopes that are eroding into streams, so doing all that. So in a lot of ways, people think of open space protection as buying land. And that's really just the first step a long-term commitment to restore and enhance lands and waters to benefit nature and people.
You're listening to Sustainability Now. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today is Andrea McKenzie, General Manager of the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority. We've been talking about the authority's work and you know what it does, how it buys land, how it manages land. And we were just talking about fragile spaces that need to be restored. Do you have a lot of problems with vandalism?
Well, I think... Once we own land, we have to be vigilant and managing that land. There are folks that will come out and poach wildlife. Sometimes we will have people that set fires. So that's something our staff has to be vigilant in, patrolling our lands and working with other agencies to do that. I think in some ways public lands are the commons, right? And so not all of us treat the commons as we would a precious resource. But by and large, that's the exception to the rule. Most of our public cherish the open spaces that they've helped protect. They are so pleased to get out in them. They go on hikes themselves, or they go on educational programs, and they roll up their sleeves and put some muscle into restoring the open spaces and cleaning up the trails. So that's really more common than not.
Sure. Do you have a large volunteer program then?
Yeah, we actually do. We have a really robust volunteer program. We're really proud of that. We have a trail patrol. We have trail stewards. We have folks that are docents out on our trails. We have people that are leading walks. And we have a lot of local businesses that want to just bring their employees out to have a day out on the land, helping us restore and steward our lands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is a strong ethic in this region for giving back and helping to take care of the public commons. And so we're really proud of that. We have a couple hundred active volunteers, and it's growing all the time.
Yeah, that idea of the commons is an important one, and we see it, you know, sort of coming back more and more, although I doubt that many people actually know what that means, but that's not important as long as they're committed to them. I understand, so you have an urban open space program, and I'm going to read here from the internet text, which reserves 20% of its capital expenditures for open space projects of the participating cities and the county. So what does that entail?
Well, when the Open Space Authority was first formed in the early 90s, it made a commitment to giving back into the actual cities that support us. So most of the time when we think about protecting open space, we're thinking about the wide open spaces out there somewhere around our cities.
Yeah.
But just as important is investing in healthy nature, healthy green space in the actual incorporated cities themselves. So we have two programs. One is that there's a dedicated amount of funding every year at the end of each year from one of our funding sources that goes back into the cities. It's called the 20% program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on the population of each of the cities. So, for instance, San Jose is a pretty big population. Most of the funding in that program goes to San Jose by population.
Yeah.
But more recently, in 2014 and then just in 2020, we renewed our big measure, was called Measure Q, now called Measure T. And we have an urban open space program, which sets aside up to 25% of those funds for competitive grants from nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, so that we can do urban agriculture, community gardens, green spaces, public trails, educational programs in the cities themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important. It's really important to meet people where they are. Not everybody in our jurisdictions, and many people are in low-income neighborhoods.
Right, yeah.
In Santa Clara County, and especially in the city of San Jose,
mm-hmm.
may not be coming out to the big open space preserves that we and our partners run. So it's really important to get into the city and work with these community organizations. And, you know, we've done some studies over the last few years that show there are many barriers that urban residents have, especially those in low-income areas, to getting out into open space. And so there's really a movement, both by the Open Space Authority and many other partner agencies, including the Trust for Public Land, which is a national open space NGO, to have open space and parks within walking distance of all residents, to plant more trees for shade and to reduce urban heat island effect. And because we know open space in cities is really important for physical and mental well-being of all people.
Yeah. So does the city of San Jose engage in these urban projects, or do they then give out grants to organizations that then do, you know, various kinds of community-based projects? I'm just, you know, what's the flow of the funds?
Sure. So once the Open Space Authority collects its voter-approved tax funds through the county, each year we have a budget and we set out how much we are planning to put into urban open space projects, and we notify local cities and community-based organizations of the availability of funds. We work really closely with the city of San Jose. They apply to us as a grantee to get some of these funds. And then we work with them on all kinds of projects. Right now we're working with them on a number of trail projects along old railroad rights of way that go through neighborhoods. You know, there used to be quite a robust rail system in San Jose and Santa Clara County.
Right. And so
now we're trying to, through rail-to-trail projects, put those back to use as public trails through neighborhoods. And we're also working with organizations like Vegilution, which is in East San Jose. Huh. They're helping connect people to nature and to healthy food, especially in low-income neighborhoods. So, you know, recently we gave a grant to Vegilution, and they partnered with the Silicon Valley Bicycle Coalition to do delivery of CSA boxes to low-income residents during COVID. So some really innovative things going on, partnerships between the Open Space Authority, cities, NGOs, and the community to make sure more people have access to the benefits of nature.
Yeah, that's very, very admirable. Now, one of the things you've talked about, you did an editorial and you've sort of mentioned it in passing, are ecosystem services. And maybe you could start by telling us what that term means. And
sure.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, a lot of people aren't really sure what ecosystem services are. Sometimes we use the term nature services or nature's benefits. But really, ecosystem services are the benefits that nature provides people, like cleaning our air and water or reducing flooding or providing local food or even the public health benefits that people get from being in nature. And these benefits or services that nature provides us aren't often reflected in GDP or conventional economic analyses. But increasingly, there are studies by environmental economists across the U.S. and around the globe that are quantifying the environmental services that are provided by nature and that we really can't live without. So in 2014, the Open Space Authority joined forces with Santa Cruz County and Sonoma County to commission a first ever valuation.
Oh.
Of 18 different ecosystem services in our respective counties. And we worked with a economics firm called Earth Economics in Tacoma, Washington. And this study called Healthy Lands, Healthy Economies found that the value of these ecosystem services in our counties is significant. And in Santa Clara County, for instance, the value of those nature's benefits are between $1.9 billion and $3.6 billion annually to the local economy.
That's
so they are significant. And I think our federal and state governments are beginning to recognize the value that nature provides, especially in the face of this climate crisis.
Yeah, you know, I've been aware of this concept since it was first formulated back in the 1990s, and one of the problems has always with using that concept is that it's not monetized. That is to say, there is no actual, you know, there are avoided costs and there are costs that would add up if you didn't do that kind of protection. But there isn't any actual money flowing around. And so it becomes a kind of a conceptual notion. I'm lecturing here and I apologize. A kind of a conceptual notion that that the public has to take, you know, take on faith. Let me put it that way. And, you know, how do you use the, I mean, this is an impressive amount of funds, especially considering that your budget is $25 million a year or so, right? So how do you, you know, convey to the public that this is going on?
Well, we've been emphasizing what we think of as nature as infrastructure, or basically ecosystem services, for the better part of 5 or 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we tested the public's receptivity to that when we went to the ballot in 2014 with a major focus on the benefits of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And over 75% of the public supported that. So while we don't yet have common monetized values for nature, and they are not always appropriate, one of the ways that you quantify ecosystem services is through the public's willingness to pay for them.
Right.
So this is really, really important. And so as we prioritize areas to invest, because our $12 million can only go so far, we're going to prioritize our efforts in those areas, those landscapes, where there are high levels of ecosystem services and multiple benefits. And then we're going to look for private and public partners who believe that as well. And I'll tell you in a minute, if we talk a little bit about some of the recent land acquisitions, there are growing, there's growing interest across the board from government, the private sector, and conservation organizations to pool funds to make sure that we're protecting these unique natural areas that mm-hmm. are the life support system for our planet and our urban communities. And though they may not be appraisable values or monetized, we have other ways of prioritizing them with public and private funding.
I mean, I just bring that up because, you know, one of the risks of doing that is falling back into cost-benefit analysis, right, and comparing, you know, benefits to cost and deciding that the benefits are too small to justify protecting space. It's not a criticism or anything. It's just a concern that I have in particular. We need to take another break. I want to come back. Let's come back to that after
okay,
the
Ryan.
Break, okay? You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org, streaming on the internet. This is Sustainability Now. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today is Andrea McKenzie, General Manager of the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority. We've just been talking about ecosystem services and how one calculates them and presents them to the public. And, Andrea, you were about to say something about this.
Well, I was interested in your remark about cost benefit analysis, and it essentially doesn't seem to pencil out. I think what it kind of comes down to, Ronnie, is short term thinking versus long term thinking.
Of course, absolutely.
So when you have a balanced portfolio, you want a rate of return or a return on investment within months or a couple of years, but you also have some very safe investments for when the stock market goes south, right? And the same is true for these kinds of benefits. So you can spend a lot of money on man-made infrastructure up front,
mm-hmm.
dams, bridges, roads,
right.
That will depreciate over time. And right now, that's pointed out by President Biden, who wants to invest major money across the country in failing hard infrastructure, man-made infrastructure. Meanwhile, we need to also invest in natural infrastructure, which is the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm.
It will be there for the long run to take care of us if we take care of it, steward it, and protect it. And
mm-hmm.
so that's one of the big roles of conservation going forward.
Yeah, no, I'm fully in agreement with that. I don't, you know, I'm not critical of any of that. But I've dealt with environmental economics for a long time and always been a bit frustrated by the way in which economics treats these kinds of questions. Well, let's turn to a different topic here. So the authority has a wide range of public and K through 12 educational activities. And I wonder if you could talk about that and how you judge whether they're successful.
Sure. Well, our future leaders and our future stewards of the land are our youth, right?
Right.
The next generation. And mm-hmm. so it's really important to be investing in them. And so we offer educational programs that connect our local youth and children of all ages with nature. We deliver hundreds of programs at our open space preserves outside in libraries and schools. And these programs are free of charge. We offer field trips for schools and community groups and educational materials to teachers to help them plan lessons on natural history, wildlife, and ecology. Some of our favorite programs are our Starry Night programs, where we can go out onto our preserves that don't suffer the same kind of light pollution that we have in the cities. Mm-hmm. And we work with astronomers to really get a good look at the stars and the planet and the solar system. And we also have programs with organizations like the Wildlife Education Rehabilitation Center, which brings injured wildlife that lives actually in Santa Clara County. We bring them into the classroom, or we have people come to our preserves and have that learning going on. In terms of how we measure whether those programs are successful, well, every year we put out our budget and work plan, which the public can see. We have a independent oversight committee that looks at our expenditures to see how we've been doing and if we're doing what we said we would do to the public. And we also survey our community partners and grantees to get feedback on how to improve our programs. And I think one of the things that's most important is the Open Space Authority works really closely with other nonprofit organizations and public park agencies. So we do a lot of educational programs together on each other's lands, pooling money, coming up with ideas together. And that was really, really important during the shelter-in-place COVID-19, where we had to pivot from out in the field in-person educational activities and events to everything being virtual.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Maybe you could say something about the kinds of field trips that you organize for students.
Yeah. We often will work with specific schools within the representative school districts across our county, especially low-income school districts. And we make sure that we're working closely with the teachers to bring the students out several times during the course of the school year to our open space preserves so they can do journaling, they can learn about natural history, they can do in-the-field programs. We've done restoration projects, like in southern Santa Clara County, down in the Pajaro River Basin. We have an agricultural preserve, the Pajaro River Agricultural Preserve. And we partnered with local elementary and middle school students to come out and help us plant a very extensive hedgerow to help protect organic farming that was going on our property from some of the pesticide drift that was happening from surrounding properties. So those are just kind of some examples. And then one final one I'll give that I'm very proud of is we partnered with the Children's Discovery Museum of San Jose several years ago on a project they constructed on the grounds of the Discovery Museum, which is called Bridge to Nature or Bill's Backyard. And it's basically an outdoor play space, nature space, for kids living in the nearby urban areas to come and learn about the ecosystems of Santa Clara County, get their fingers in the dirt, have some unstructured play, and then we follow that up with actual trips to our nearby open space preserves, kind of a continuum of learning for kids. So those are some of the things that we work on.
It strikes me that you know, in many ways, the sort of the distinction, I mean, we make a strong distinction between nature and culture, right? But there are cities have their own ecologies and ecosystems, and it's interesting to think about them as open spaces as well, and how you would organize a program around that kind of, you know, urban ecosystems. I'm not suggesting you do it. I'm just sort of, you know, imagining that here.
Well, I like that idea a lot, Ronnie. And, you know,
You can commission me to develop then, okay?
Okay. But I think, you know, it's very important for agencies like ours to not presuppose that we know the culture of a community.
Sure.
And to have that community help us understand what's happening and what the needs are and empower those communities to do the kinds of projects they want to do. And that's what our Urban Open Space Grant Program is all about.
Uh-huh. I see. Well, my last question has to do with open space authorities versus land trusts. As I mentioned, that what I found in Santa Cruz County is a land trust, which, you know, acquires open spaces. What's the difference between a land trust and your agency?
Sure. We're often confused with land trusts, and so I have to explain the same question, and that is, you know, the Open Space Authority is a government agency, and like other public conservation agencies, we work really closely with land trusts.
Yeah.
Land trusts are private, nonprofit organizations that acquire land or conservation easements from private landowners to limit development and to protect open space, natural resources, agricultural resources. And examples close by are the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County and the Peninsula Open Space Trust that's based in Palo Alto, one of our closest partners.
Mm-hmm.
So when private landowners are thinking about doing conservation, they may work with a land trust first, and they can get certain tax benefits by donating all or some of the value of their land for permanent conservation. A big difference is land trusts are typically funded by private donations, like the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County.
Mm-hmm.
The public land conservation agencies like ours, who work on behalf of the public, are mostly supported by voter-approved public funding taxes. But we join forces and coordinate our efforts both to pool money, to pool our staff resources, our capacity to get projects done. And it's really the case that today no one agency or land trust really works alone. Partnerships are essential, and we can do more when we join forces as like-minded organizations.
Okay. Well, you've heard it here on KSQD 90.7 FM. I want to thank you, Andrew, for being my guest and for enlightening us on open spaces and the Santa Clara Valley Open Space Authority, and hope to keep up with what you're doing. So thanks very much. And
thank you, Ronnie.
Okay, bye.
If you'd like to listen to previous broadcasts, you can find them at ksqd.org/sustainabilitynow, as well as Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Pocket Casts. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all the staff and volunteers who make KSQD your community radio station, including Emily Dunham, who is engineer for this show. And so, until next every other Sunday, Sustainability Now.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountain rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in, don't fence me in, don't.